It's Thursday, September the 25th. I'm Alec Hogg, and here's your Biz News Briefing. In today's briefing, Zilla's Joburg mayoral bid is still in the headlines. Fubar City at the United Nations, where Cyril was affected as well. Remgro's boss shares some tips on how to survive South Africa's economic slump, but he also warns about expropriation without compensation. Magnus Haystick explains why offshore investing has worked so well. Apple has joined the Intel party, or has it? There's a new casino coming to Somerset West. And in the tailpiece, some fun with which South Africans arrived here first. Let's start off with the Helen Ziller mayoral bid for Johannesburg. She's been in the news. She's taken some interviews that, well, on hindsight, or with hindsight, she might not have done. But I guess if you want to be the mayor of that vibrant city that we call Johannesburg, you're going to have to take quite a few bumps along the road. Jonathan Katzenellenbogen spoke this morning to my colleague Chris Stain about the kind of resistance that Zilla is likely to face in her bid to become not just the mayor, but to turn around South Africa's richest city.
What are the biggest landmines that could be laid for her?
I think they're laying the landmines already. If you listen to the talk shows, there was one that was quite controversial, and it's all over social media. And you know, so this talk show host came in and asked about Gaza, asked about you know, the sort of questions: aren't you a nasty racist anyway? And well, you're not delivering to black people and so forth. But she was very good, and it's good that she's asked those sorts of questions, because they get those questions out of the way so she can focus her campaign. And I think she's not going to be tripped up by a question. I think she's too highly experienced. She knows how to conduct these sorts of interviews. And I think if you really listen to it, she did very well. But there's a lot that can go wrong in a year. One of that is a very strong mayoral candidate from one of the other parties might emerge. I would think that, I don't know, but Herman Mashaba of Action SA might come in again and base his campaign on him having run the city, although not very well at all. Some time ago, while as a DA mayor, that might happen. The ANC might want that year to get its ducks in a row and go on a campaign of filling potholes and getting water, ensuring that water supplies are not, and power supplies are not cut off to areas where it has lots of voters. So that might happen. But who knows? You know, a year is a long time, and a lot can happen.
A lot can happen indeed. Jonathan Katzenellenbogen's interview with Chris Stain is on the Biz News TV channel. Go and have a watch. Well, he didn't mention Kenny Kunene's candidacy. He's from the Patriotic Alliance, and the Patriotic Alliance might be shaping up to make Kenny the anti-GNU candidate, because there's lots of talk at the moment. ENCA confirming today that one of its reporters had been told by Gayton McKenzie that the Patriotic Alliance will be leaving the Government of National Unity. What that means for its local coalitions, including in Johannesburg and Ekurhuleni, where it's in partnership with the ANC, is anybody's guess. But for the moment, the PA are telling us there's no confirmation on that. However, they will be having a caucus meeting in Johannesburg this afternoon. So we can expect more news on whether Gayton is going, and should he go, the interesting impact that would have on the candidacy of his deputy president, Kenny Kuneni. We're getting back to Helen Ziller in a much friendlier atmosphere compared with that which she faced at the 94.7 Breakfast Show studio. She was able to give her insights into why she feels that the turnaround of Joburg is on, and indeed why she's certainly going to be giving her mayoral efforts every attempt. She told the DA's team podcast team exactly what she thinks about what's going to be required to fix Joburg.
Helen, just a simple question. Do you believe that we can turn Johannesburg around? Do you believe that you can turn Johannesburg around?
Well, I don't believe that I can, but I believe with the whole of society effort, we can. Mm. And I don't think we'd be going into this with such determination if we thought it was a lost cause. Yeah. Mm. We believe in Joburg. Mm-hmm. We really believe in Joburg and its future. And it's because it's got so many active citizens doing their thing. So working together, we can turn around what's been broken. We can make Johannesburg work for everyone. Mm. That is the vision. Mm-hmm. And the DA can get that done. Mm. It doesn't help to have one province and one major city working. That's like sitting on the top deck of the Titanic and having sundowners. Mm. No, we're not going to do that. We've got to ensure that that whole ship is floating. The great and good ship South Africa has to be floating. Yeah. And if you want South Africa to float, you've got to get the metros to be the strong underpinning of the boat. Mm. Mm-hmm. And metros make great countries. Mm. That's what we're going to do. Mm. And then we will live in a country with a real future.
Hey, Helen. There are many people in Johannesburg who are delighted that you are putting forward your candidacy. But there are others, I guess, who are going to be just as opposed to it. What an interesting time we face on that side. And I'll remind you that Frans Cronje said on BizNews TV some time ago, when it was still just rumored that Helen would be the DA's candidate for the mayoral race next year, he said it could be an absolute stroke of brilliance, because if she were to take over and if she were to fix Johannesburg, and given the support that the DA is likely to get from the business community, that's not off the table, then it could lead to a very different result for South Africa as a whole in 2029, one where the DA may well become the biggest party in the country. What an interesting time we are living through. Well, it's interesting not just here, but all over the world, and in particular in the United Nations at the moment, where our own president, Cyril Ramaphosa, had the experience of building up to a crescendo and then having his microphone cut off while he was addressing the General Assembly. Earlier, a similar situation happened with Donald Trump. Well, Ramaphosa kind of gave up on it, but Trump didn't. He made sure that he got his revenge by speaking for 40 minutes in what was supposed to be a very short, or a relatively short, address. This, he'd been teed up for it, though, because as he was entering the building, the minute he put his foot on the escalator, it stopped. So sabotage, who knows? But our partners at the Financial Times of London this morning addressed the issue and gave some background to what's going on at the United Nations right now and why some of the people who work there might be feeling terribly happy with Donald Trump. Let's join in on the conversation.
U.S. President Donald Trump spoke to the U.N. General Assembly. He talked about Gaza and Ukraine and Iran, but mostly he used the pulpit to chide others.
The U.N. has such tremendous potential, but it's not even coming close to living up to that potential. All they seem to do is write a really strongly worded letter.
The FT's U.S. European Foreign Affairs correspondent Amy McKinnon followed Trump's speech and the reactions to it. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
So let's start with the speech itself. What stuck out to you besides everything?
A couple of things stuck out to me. One was the split screen between Trump's first speech to the UN General Assembly in 2017 during his first term and the speech now, and the dramatic change in both the content and the tone of those speeches, which I think charts just the dramatically different foreign policy that we're seeing from Trump in his second term overall. In 2017, he spoke about the value of humanitarian aid, of allies, all things that he has really, in the case of humanitarian aid, cut. And when it comes to alliances, he has strained in his second term. So that was one. And then I think the second is just that it was really classic Trump. There was no major news that came out of this speech, but it was long. It was at times lecturing.
Amy, as much as Trump focused on the problems with the UN, the US and President Trump are a big part of the UN's problems right now. Can you tell me about recent tensions between the US and the UN and why it matters?
So since Trump returned to office at the beginning of this year, the US has not made any payments to the UN's regular budget. And that's deepened a very significant financial crisis. The UN this year is expecting to have to cut its budget by $500 million, something like 20% in job losses following a big cut in US funding. I mean, just to give you some context about the outsized role that the US plays in the UN, the United States funds around a fifth of the regular budget, a quarter of the peacekeeping budget, and 40% of the humanitarian budget.
So then, Amy, what does the U.S. step back mean for the future of the U.N.?
The U.S. is still the biggest player in town financially, militarily. It has that clout. And I think not just the United Nations, but worldwide, I think we are all learning day by day what it looks like when the U.S. decides to pivot or shift its position in that world order. And where that will be felt at the U.N. is just that question of clout. You know, the U.S. has so many allies around the world, and it just has that capacity to corral U.N. members around a certain agenda. And it leaves a vacuum if the U.S. is stepping back from bodies like this that we're already seeing countries like China really rushing to fill. One thing that Beijing has been very skilled at is placing its diplomats in small kind of niche UN agencies and offices that people don't really pay a lot of attention to. And so when the U.S. steps back, it leaves a vacuum. And the question is, well, who will then fill that void and what will that world look like?
And when Donald Trump went up to the stage, he stopped and embraced Lula da Silva, the president of Brazil, apparently one of his foes, or certainly if you follow the headlines, it appears as though the two of them were at loggerheads. And he had some pretty kind things to say about Lula. Lula went back home and came back to a hero's welcome. So it looks like that relationship is getting better. South Africa's relationship, not so much. The latest feedback we have is that Parks Tau, the trade minister, has received a response from the US with its outline of what it demands on this 30% tariff, or to reduce the 30% tariff that South African goods are paying now going into the US. It's good to remember that that was zero a few months ago. So it's gone from zero to 30%. And the commentators are telling us that the discussions are now at a crossroads. There was no warm embrace between Trump and Ramaphosa at the United Nations.
Discover Southern Africa with DCC Hotel Group, your trusted partner for a safe African safari. From Serengeti to Cape Town, explore luxury lodges, witness the Big Ten, and savor wines. Enjoy seamless booking, 24-hour support, book with confidence.
This is where the unthinkable happened. They just came here and took his car.
No. I sold it to them. What's this?
It's crime scene tape. Did they pay you at least?
Within 15 minutes, money was in my account.
Were you happy with the number they brought you?
I got almost the same price as what I paid for the car. Everything was easy, everything was painless.
Well, there you have it, South Africa. With We Buy Cars, you won't come short. I'll tell you really.
1.93.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
We Buy Cars star will be making an appearance later in the program in our tailpiece. Don't miss it. Remgro has been synonymous with South Africa Inc. for many years. In fact, there was a time when all you had to do was put Remgro into your portfolio and you were guaranteed to outperform the JSE as a whole. Well, that hasn't been the case of late, because as the South African economy has been struggling, well, so has Remgro. It's done a lot, though, to address this issue. And I spoke earlier this in the week, in fact, on Tuesday afternoon, after the release of the Remgro results, to Chief Executive Yanni Durant. He's been in the job for 13 years. He's been with the group for pretty much his whole career. So he's seen the ebbs and flows of the South African economy. Their full interview is on BizNews In Depth, which is our special channel where you can watch the full discussions of the interviews that we have, in particular with business leaders. There are highlights packages that are on the BizNews TV channel where you are watching this right now, but you can also get more of the good stuff on the BizNews In Depth channel. But for you today, we have a little highlight from that conversation where Yanni tells us about how to survive the economic slump and continued turbulence that we face here in South Africa, but also waves a very vigorous flag against the expropriation without compensation attempt being put forward by the Ekurhuleni Metro.
So you need to be careful about your balance sheet and that strong balance sheet. You need to carefully look at your cash flow generation and always to focus on the controllables, but be very much aware of the uncontrollables, what is outside your control, the impact that they can have on the business. And we've seen this movie many times in the past, and that always comes with institutional memory when things like the feed price on the chicken side goes out of whack, the sugar prices goes out of whack, and suddenly you into very trouble. And then if you've got too much gearing at the centers, they teach you very quickly. I mean, it's a travesty what has happened in the last 6 months, that we see Goodyear, a seller of Mittal AMSA, the old Escor, is not there anymore. Oh, it's been a business to be winding down. And then Marion Roberts, I mean, a stalwart of the old industry, is not there anymore. It's a travesty to see this. And that is why that's what we want to prevent. We might never be the outperformer, but we'll never bet the farm. And that's why we'll be there in 50 years' time. And we're in good times, we could do well. In bad times, we're quite defensive strategy, good. And I think we always do better in bad times against the opposition, because I think we've got good management teams and very strong cash flow generating assets, high quality assets.
And a lot of what you've said could actually be applied even in very small businesses. Just don't borrow too much. Keep your balance sheet strong. Get your earnings quality up, etc. But Yanni, you mentioned Bet the Farm, and it's something that has in this last week has now raised concerns. This Driefontein Farm, portion 406, 32 hectares outside of Ekurhuleni, which the Ekurhuleni Metro expropriated without compensation. Now, it's fine you expropriate it, and the owner said, fine, they can expropriate it, but they must pay us market value. Now are they going to court? And they've been at court on that thing now for 6 years. Surely, from where you're sitting, this must be worrying.
That will be worrying. If they can't win their court case, I mean, I think it's going to be very negative, highly negative consequences for South Africa if that can happen in that space. I'm not an expert on this, and I didn't know, or I probably don't know all the facts, but from what I hear, they actually had development plans and the municipality stopped them, or that it was not a useless piece of land lying there. If that is productive land that people wanted to develop housing or whatever, and then they tried to expropriate in that manner, I think the consequences will be very, very negative.
Come on, guys. Wakey, wakey. Don't let the EFF change South Africa. And I say the EFF because the portfolio that is driving this demand that the expropriated land has no compensation is very firmly in the hands of the EFF. The housing portfolio at the Ekurhuleni Metro and the community development portfolio at that metro are run by EFF MECs. So you know what's happening there and you know what the consequences will be. In the same way that Remgro has changed its approach to suit the circumstances in South Africa, Brenthurst Wealth's Magnus Haystack has done the same thing for his clients. He's been well known for the last decade in telling them to invest abroad. And, well, I'm sure he gets lots of bottles of whiskey from very grateful recipients of a far better return by having their money offshore than they would have received had they had it here. Magnus gave the opening address at the BizNews Investment Conference last week, and he used part of that to talk about the increase in, or how the increase in our capacity to invest abroad has actually had the result of keeping a lot of people in South Africa who might otherwise have gone and lived elsewhere.
But the big change, ladies and gentlemen, came 1st of April 2015. Out of the blue, without any speculation, the government increased the offshore allowance from 400,000 to a million, single discretionary allowance, and 10 million if you apply through the channels with tax clearance, etc. And that was right at the time when the Guptas and the state capture and the Zuma years were starting to have an impact on our confidence in the country. And that was like floodgates had been opened. And since 2015, there's about 1.3, 1.4 trillion rand has legally gone offshore into other waters. I would think the number is bigger today. Now, the local investment industry tried to protect their business, and they had this campaign of local is lekker and JSE is cheap, etc. I'm not going to be talking about that bit. But the clients that we are dealing with, high net worth clients, saw the opportunity to take money offshore. And for very good reason, the Wall Street was running, NASDAQ was running. There was serious money to be made. But the most important thing from my perspective, from a perspective of a South African, was the freedom that that allowance has created for South African investors, families, etc. What I mean by that, I've had many clients telling me, thank you for taking my money offshore. It has enabled me to have the confidence that I have a large nest egg offshore. And not only in our company, quite recently, the Crutham survey came out. It was previously called IntelliDex, where they go and ask all the high net worth wealth managers, where are you placing your funds? And they interviewed about 160 companies. And the number that came back was, on average, 64% of the assets are abroad or in offshore linked type of investment instruments.
Wow, that's a big number. And so is 1.5 trillion rand. I guess the real message there is, if we can get South Africa right, if what Helen Zille wants to do to Joburg can be done to the country as a whole, there's just so much money from us, from South African citizens, that could be drilled back into this country, let alone that which can come from abroad. It really all starts with the economy. Get economic growth going and things will turn around very, very quickly. But it's not just here where survival is uppermost in minds. The US semiconductor company, Intel, has been fighting a rearguard battle now for some years, but the tide there does seem to be turning. The US government is pumping a lot of money into Intel. SoftBank has followed suit. It's putting about $5 billion into it. And now comes news that maybe Apple are going to also be going along that path. Remember, Apple makes its own chips at the moment, or designs them anyway. There could be some change in that, which would then give Intel another boost. Our partners at Bloomberg had the scoop on this story this morning.
Let's bring now Bloomberg's Ryan Gold for more on that news. Congratulations on the scoop. Tell us what we need to know right now.
Yeah, I think this is clearly breaking dynamic, but these are early stage talks. I can report that Apple and Intel are in early discussions around a potential investment. Intel has reached out to the company about what, you know, how ways they could work more closely together. This clearly comes on the back of NVIDIA's investment in Intel a few weeks ago, $5 billion. We saw earlier in the month, or maybe last month, that SoftBank as well has pledged $2 billion to invest in Intel. So this is part of its comeback bid. This is kind of Intel saying it's proactive. It's here to really shore up its balance sheet. It wants help. And I think it's really showing the U.S. government, which is one of Intel's largest shareholders, that it's there and it's ready to explore its options.
I am curious, Orion, about the idea of sort of who's nudging who on this, or if you have any insight into that. Also, I noticed the story that you reported didn't actually have an actual number. When we talk about multi-billion, are we talking about a $5 billion investment or $20 billion? Do we have any sense of just how big this could potentially be?
At this point, Romain, no. Mm-hmm. But I think if you just base off what we've seen with NVIDIA, with SoftBank, I mean, you know, if you're talking about someone with the balance sheet that Apple has, and, you know, Apple's already pledged to invest $600 billion in the United States over a four-year period in part of its in partnership with the Trump administration, I think you're looking at something that will probably be, you know, in the billions. But again, these are early stage talks, and as to what that looks like, we don't know yet. Yeah. I think, you know, could this be a chips deal? Could this be manufacturing? Could this be packaging? This could be one of them among many things.
Mm-hmm. I know you're thinking the same thing. Was that a South African accent that you heard? I looked him up on LinkedIn, and Ryan went to university in the UK. So anyway, but who knows? Maybe he went to school here. Moving on to the stories that are on the Stock Exchange News Service today, and the most interesting one is to do with what's happening in the Western Cape. A company called Soho Sun, which has got many casinos and hotels around the country, has been working for 7 years on getting the gambling board to allow it to move the casino it has at the moment, or the casino license it has at the moment in Caledon, to the far more densely populated Somerset West. And this morning, it announced to shareholders that finally it's managed to get through. The new casino and hotel will be built on vacant land at the intersection of the N2 highway and the R44. That's around the area of Broadway Boulevard. And I'm sure those people who are concerned about the running the gauntlet, which occurs nowadays for people who turn right at the airport to go towards Somerset West, will also be greeting this news with a lot of enthusiasm, because that too has to have some kind of an impact, one would imagine. Not such good news coming out of Barlow World. In fact, awful news from Barlow World. They had a voluntary update today for the 11 months of their financial year to the end of September. Their Russian operation had a collapse in revenue, down 54%. Overall, group revenues at Barlow World were down 10%. The operating profit, or what they call EBITDA, down 9%. This has pushed the group net debt from $3.5 billion to $5.4 billion. And here at home in Southern Africa, they also are seeing lower volumes and rising costs. However, on the upside, they haven't broken their financial covenants, so there's no issue yet with the problems of the banks doing anything more serious to the group. We did try to get hold of the CEO, but he's not taking any comments or any discussions just at the moment, perhaps after the financial results are released. Well, here's that promised tailpiece about who actually arrived first in South Africa, but really, does it matter?
Hi. Could I get
a strong white coffee, please?
Yeah, queen size tea, please.
Okay, I was here before both of you guys, okay? Can I please get one of your best delicious Afrikaners, please?
Okay, Mr. Africa time over here. I was here before you, man. Sorry. Please make it a Ventersdorp special.
Seriously, you can't just come here and take my place. I was here from 1820, so that means I was first here. Queen size tea, please.
That is rich coming from Mr. Concentration Camps over here, because I was here from 1652, Butiki, which means it was way before you, okay? Give me a national white coffee and keep the white and the coffee apart, thank you.
Sorry, but you're doing what he's doing. Just because he came here and took your place, you can't come here and take my place.
What time did you get here?
Look, I don't have a watch, but I don't need one. Look at this. Look at this. I'm definitely from this area, and I would like your best level one Africano, please.
You mean an Americano?
No, a strong black coffee. An Africano.
No such thing as Africano. More coffee, my Noah, please.
I was here first. Rolls Royce boss and Robert Tenney team me now.
I was here before you and you.
I was here first.
Before you and
I was here first. Look up, Bertha.
Oh, now I'm making it about skin color. Classic.
I was here first.
Oh, wait. Can I get a koi pacino, please?
Yeah, he was here first.
Get in, buddy.
Oh, this one's on me.
You delicious. They've got lovely biscuits here.
Get this guy some land.
Finally.
Oh, man. Ugh, we just laugh at ourselves, don't we? That's the way. This has been your Biz News Briefing. We are back again on Monday. Until then, cheerio.